From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2020. Looking for something to do with your Valentine this weekend? The Cedarburg Winter Festival is featuring a roaring 20s theme. That should be a hoot. But if you want to be practical instead of romantic, there's always the Nervy Home Improvement Show at State Fair Park this weekend. Well, business is booming at Iran's largest flag factory, which makes U.S., British, and Israeli flags, but not for U.S., British, and Israeli citizens. Oh, no, they're made for Iranian protesters. Talk about a niche market. And a man from North Carolina came home to find a box of puppies on his porch. So he called the cops, wanting to know what to do with them. The cops showed up and pointed out that they were not puppies at all, but baby bear cubs. I'm guessing this guy never had a dog or even seen a dog in his life. And finally, this is kind of nutty. A Chinese marathon runner under lockdown during the coronavirus outbreak has kept up his training by running 31 miles around his living room furniture. Each lap was 27 feet. It took him just over 5 hours to do over 6,000 laps. I think I'd rather have the coronavirus. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Paige Ratke, Joel Dreesang. And wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Matt. It's a pretty good week, in spite of the sell-off that we saw yesterday and today. NASDAQ up 2.2% for the week, adding 211 points, closed at 97.31. Total return year-to-date, pretty impressive, 8.5%. Pretty good jump out of the box. Broader markets, the S&P Stock Composite 500 up 1.6% this week, tacking on 52 points to close at 3380. S&P now up 4.7%, including dividends year-to-date. Pretty nice. Dow Jones Industrial Average added 1% this week, tacking on 295 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 29,397, down now up 3.1% year-to-date. You know, Kyle, we've said for decades that it truly is about interest rates and earnings, and I was so impressed by the fact that when the government auctioned 30-year treasuries yesterday, the yield plunged to a record low 2.06% on the 30-year. Clearly tells you that big money doesn't expect inflation to come up. Big money doesn't expect rates to go up. The fact that they would bid so much for those 30-year bonds and lock in 2.06 for 30 years, that's a really long time. And I suspect that that's one of the central underpinnings of the market now. There's just no other alternative except to buy stocks.
You know, such a good point that when you look at 2.06 on the 30-year Treasury this week and you look at how that compares to much of the rest of the world, you know, it's no wonder that yields have been pushed lower here in the U.S. You've got money from pretty much everywhere chasing that safe haven asset, chasing those bond yields lower. And then, you know, the obvious question is, what do you do if you need to get to a certain level of return to meet your retirement needs? And yet at the same time, you know, expectations for bond returns have come down in line with the interest rates. And so, you know, I think you're absolutely right. Stocks have to be a part of that conversation, potentially more than they were in the past. And we saw some news in the last week as well that focused on, you know, maybe what's the right asset allocation, and I'm sure we can dive into that later. But, you know, I think that the easy answer there is that ultimately it depends on what you need from your portfolio, and it depends on who you are.
You know, Kyle, of course, the major news of the week is the terrible coronavirus that is primarily in China. Pretty interesting to see the Goldman Sachs forecast now that GDP could get pulled back almost a full 0.5% this quarter. That's a lot when you think the GDP may only be 1.7, 1.8% for the year. Chinese auto sales fell 18% in January. That's a big number. And it seems that the economic impact of the virus is fairly unclear at this point in time. But the fact that many of the factories in China still aren't producing, a lot of folks haven't come back to work since the Lunar New Year a week and a half ago now. I wonder if you'd share some of your thoughts on the virus and its impact on economies now around the world.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. You know, I think the big change this week in the numbers came largely from the way that we're measuring cases now. So up until Wednesday of this week, we only counted those cases that had actually been confirmed with a laboratory test. Now, also counting cases that have been confirmed by symptoms. And so if all you're looking at is headlines, you're definitely going to see a pretty big increase in cases. You know, I think some of the underlying data, when you look at laboratory tests, shows that maybe the rate of cases is falling off a little bit now, but certainly way too early in the game to say that. And as you mentioned, I think the reason why we care so much as investors is because we want to know, what's the impact of China shutting its borders? What's the impact of China shuttering factories going to be on the U.S. economy and on the global economy more broadly? And how does that kind of carry over to what we're doing? And so as I think we look at the impact right now of, for example, you know, the U.S. automotive industry, which, yeah, a lot of our cars are produced here or produced in Mexico. But the reality is that a lot of the parts are coming from China, coming from factories that have been shuttered. And so that's going to have an impact on our ability to continue to build cars here, our ability to sell those cars. You look at a lot of the technology products we sell here in the U.S., and if those factories are continue to be shuttered as they have been, that's going to have an impact on iPhone stocks, for example. And so less inventory to sell means potentially less sales overall. And then you add in the impact of fewer people having income if they're not working. And certainly that has an impact on the global economy. And so, you know, I think, as you mentioned, it's far too early to say, here's what the impact is going to be. We've seen in the past with diseases like this, with SARS, for example, that there is a significant and immediate impact to gross domestic product, an impact to stocks as well. We tend to see that the pent-up demand that happens in the midst of those outbreaks makes its way into the economy once things have settled down. And so, you know, maybe the saving grace there is that the little bit of an impact that might happen now, we might get to see a little bit of an uptick on the other side of this. But right now, we don't know when that's going to be. And certainly, I think the greater concern right now is the humanitarian crisis that's taking place.
It's already showing up in the U.S. with reduced trade and reduced tourism from Asia. And those are, you know, an immediate impact. But you're right. It's unclear as to how that's all going to play out. But I think it's a time to err on the side of caution. Dave, what's your take on current events?
Bob, you mentioned the high demand for safe haven assets here, which is, I think, kind of remarkable. You look at the bond demand that we've seen so far this year, and also read a report today that money market funds have now approached $3.6 trillion, starting to infringe on the all-time high record set back after the financial crisis of $3.9 trillion. And yet we're still seeing the markets advance. The last 14 months has been quite a run. So you have to ask yourself, at what point in time, what pushes that money in these low-yielding bonds and certainly in cash to try to find their way, as Kyle was kind of alluding to, a higher return? Is it something that investors will finally capitulate watching the markets advance and get in now at these valuations, or will they show the type of discipline it's going to take to wait into the future when they see prices come down in the markets? I think it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Well, historically, most individual investors wait until markets peak, and perhaps we pass the crossover point Wednesday with all three of the major indexes hitting all-time highs. Hard to say when people let go of the money. You know, I get more and more questions about the election these days, and depending upon which side of the aisle you sit on, some folks think we're headed to gloom. Some people think that the good times will continue. And it's frustrating, as you know, because 70% of our economy is consumer spending. Most people make purchases without even thinking about who's in the White House or who's controlling Congress. Another 16% is government spending. We used to care about deficits. Apparently, we don't anymore. So that's 86% of the economy that really isn't directly connected to politics. Remaining 14% business spending, capital spending, that one's pretty squishy. CEO confidence is terrible at a time when consumers' confidence is good. So one of those groups is wrong, of course, you know, on that outlook. But, you know, for me, when you look at just the 20% drop in the price of oil in 4 weeks, so folks, that's a lot. Secondly, we used to talk about for every 1 cent that oil went down, you could directly correlate it to an increase in the economy. So the point simply is, it's going to cost a whole lot less to fill up your car when you go travel around the countryside this spring and summer. That'll help consumer spending. 20% drop in oil is a lot, particularly just in a four-week period of time. They think now that we're overproducing almost 500,000 barrels of oil a day. So they're going to need to start stockpiling it, or they're going to have to scale way back on production, because you can only stockpile so much oil here in the United States. So that'll be a driver. But Dave, to get to the central point of what you were getting at, you know, at some point the ether wears off on folks and they realize, well, I guess I'm in this for the long term. There are all sorts of good stock funds and stocks that pay dividends way more than what a money market fund pays. And people say, well, you know, there's only so much I need to have handy. And I guess I'll just go out and try to get a dividend off of some of the money. But it's typically, you know, the markets climb a wall of worry, and by that, kind of a trite worn expression, but it's valid because stock markets tend to do well at a time of despair when people are worried about, you know, where's the country going, when people are worried about the global economy slowing and will that affect the United States. And just all the uncertainties out there, that's when stocks tend to do good. You know, Warren Buffett is so well known as saying that if you want certainty, you're going to pay a high price. And if you're willing to invest during periods of uncertainty, you're going to get a better price. Joel, you sent an email out earlier today that when I read it, somewhat disappointing. FactSet's now calling for an 8% increase in earnings for this calendar year. For those regular listeners of this podcast, you'll know that we track that pretty closely. We started the year with FactSet thinking that earnings for the S&P be about 9.7%. End of January, the number went down to 9.4. And then just in a matter of a couple of weeks, we dropped pretty good down to 8%.
Yeah, that's been going down pretty steadily, Bob, and you're right, it is disappointing. And one of the things that was interesting in the recent FactSet announcement, too, was that they, about the coronavirus, they were tracking what companies were saying in their earnings calls, and they had 138 companies, I think, mentioned coronavirus so far. So even though it's early on that, you know, companies are starting to think about, you know, the consequences of what that's going to mean to their business. And these are companies in the S&P 500. And we also had a report today from the consumer sentiment numbers from the University of Michigan. And consumers are actually starting to talk a little bit. I think 7% of the consumers that were interviewed on their own mentioned the coronavirus as something that's creeping into their considerations of economic expectations. So it's still a question out there. It's still something that adds to that uncertainty that you're talking about.
You had pretty good numbers on the consumer price index.
That's right. So besides the consumer sentiment number, which actually was very positive, it was. You know, we're at the second highest level of, you know, consumer expectations in this almost 11 years of expanding economy. But the consumer price index also showed that, you know, we're moving along as far as the growth of the economy. It's showing that we've had 2% or more core consumer price index inflation year to year almost for 2 years now, and that's showing economic growth. That's been a number that's running higher than the number that the Fed likes to look at, the PCE index, the core PCE index that's buried in the GDP reports. So that number has been below 2%, which is what the Fed wants. But you know, at least the CPI is showing that the economy is growing.
And Joel, I think it's so interesting when you look at the inflation data, how much nuance there is between the various components. You look at medical costs over the past few years that have risen pretty sharply, and then you look at things like energy costs, which have been pretty flat or declining over the last few years. And so I think especially for the investor, especially for the retiree, it's not so much about what that number says, but about what it means for their finances and what it means for kind of the things they're spending money on. And nothing more obvious than something that I think everybody today on recording on Valentine's Day is going to be interested in. But you look at restaurant prices year over year up more than 3.5%, and then making that same meal at home year over year would just cost you 0.7% more. And so I think there's areas of the economy, there's areas of kind of your budget or of your spending where you're going to see that impact far more than others. And again, restaurants, I think, have been one that's really benefited from the strong consumer.
Paige, let's bring you into the show. What's on your mind these days?
We touched on a lot of the things that I'm looking at, the coronavirus, cash balances that we're seeing. But, one thing that we didn't really talk too much about today is just the international stocks and the opportunities that we see out there. Looking back over the past 10 years, obviously, United States has really been the place to have been. Since 2010, you're looking at the S&P having been up over 180% versus the MSCI ex-US only gaining 18%. But I'm thinking that we're going to start to see some signs of that turning, and it might be a good time to reevaluate where you are with your international portfolio and add a little bit more to stocks there, particularly just looking from a valuation standpoint. So U.S. stocks are overvalued right now. We're not seeing the same thing from an international standpoint. So we have to look at that, factoring the coronavirus. Maybe that'll just push off the growth rather than totally destroy it. But ultimately, right now, I like looking at those managers that are taking more of a global approach to investing. So rather than looking at one country versus the other, look at the best companies around the world and see where are they getting those earnings from, and trying to overweight the ones that are going to do better.
The two things that I worry about with increasing international exposure, one is the very recent strength of the U.S. dollar kind of works as, a headwind, particularly for the emerging market countries that are not pegged to the dollar. And the other thing I worry about is that the earnings aren't there. So you're right, valuations are really attractive. You can buy stocks all day long in Europe and Asia for 13 times earnings, give or take. We're at upper 18s. But the part that I like about your story, Paige, is just a simple concept of planting a seed in investors' minds that, the next 10 years just will not be like the last 10. So that clearly tells me that the next 10 years, the money's going to get made outside the United States. And all of us suffer from the home country bias. All of us suffer from the behavioral issues of, hey, wait, but this is where I made all the money the last 10 years, and you don't want to shake away from that. Japan's not going to stay down forever. Europe's not going to stay down forever. If I had to pick a favorite region, all day long it would be Asia, because they have very strong demographic growth, and that drives economic growth, as you're well aware. They've got all sorts of people coming up through the ages that will fuel their workforce for decades into the future. That's my favorite thing about Asia. So I think it might take a little bit of weakness in the dollar to really get my attention overseas. But you're certainly heading in the right direction on that comment that, you try to get a bargain on what you buy, and Europe, particularly Asia, is a bargain now. Been a bargain for a while, might stay a bargain, but it's a great way to allocate some of the money. Kyle, let me wrap up with you. I mentioned just a minute ago that earnings revisions are coming lower. It's kind of deja vu all over again. Last year, we started the year with earnings forecast to go up 10%. We finished the year. Earnings are going to be up barely 1%, not even. Without asking you to do a deep dive on earnings across all the sectors, I'm going to take a stab and say that the big revision that we just saw is coming out of the oil patch. And that outside that, I'm still thinking that the glass is half full and things look fairly good?
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think that's absolutely the right way to look at this, is that a lot of what has happened is because of declining oil prices. A lot of what has happened is because of maybe a little bit of a slowdown in global growth. And I think the next couple of quarters are going to look a little weak. When you get past the second quarter of this year, though, you start to get to year-over-year comparisons that I think are much more favorable. You know, you look at the third quarter when we actually had a decline in earnings last year. That makes it an easier comparison year-over-year when we get to the third quarter of this year. And so, you know, I think the reality is we flirted with an earnings recession in 2019. I think we will have avoided it based on what the fourth quarter looks like. But we're going to see continued slow growth here in quarter one and quarter two. We're talking about then growth picking up in the end of this year. And I think if we can carry that over into 2021, you go from a forward PE that's approached 19 right now in the market to a forward PE that against 2021 earnings looks more like 17.5. And that, you know, I think given where rates are right now and given where, you know, you're seeing just the opportunities in stocks here versus much of the rest of the world, I think that's a much more reasonable number. Of course, that counts on earnings for next year coming in the way we expect, and it counts on stock prices not moving all that much higher from here. But at the very least, it gives us some cover if we can get through these next two quarters pretty cleanly, if we can get through these next two quarters without huge revisions to the downside, that potentially supports at least stocks where they are, if not stocks advancing much beyond this.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the show. We enjoy doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.